Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, May 12th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Samantha Lane Perfoss.
Lord of the Flies is a classic best-selling 1954 novel about what happens when British boys are shipwrecked on an island. It paints a dark image of humanity, promoted for centuries by politicians, scientists, philosophers, and clerics, that cruelty, selfishness, and violence are instinctive qualities. But what if that cynical narrative is just plain wrong? In a soon-to-be-released book, Dutch historian and atheist Rutger Bregman directly challenges the William Golding portrait of human nature. In 1965, six teenage Tongan boys fled their Catholic boarding school, stole a boat, and were soon shipwrecked on a deserted South Pacific island. When they were discovered 15 months later, the Australian sea captain who rescued them wrote, "The boys had set up a small commune with food garden, hollowed out tree trunks to store rainwater, a gymnasium with curious weights, a badminton court, chicken pens, and a permanent fire, all from handiwork, an old knife blade, and much determination." "Sometimes they quarreled," writes Mr. Bregman, who interviewed the captain and one of the boys. "But whenever that happened, they solved it by imposing a timeout. Their days began and ended with song and prayer." In an excerpt from his book, Humankind, A Hopeful History, Mr. Bregman writes, "The real Lord of the Flies is a tale of friendship and loyalty, one that illustrates how much stronger we are if we can lean on each other." Now to our five stories, including the resilience of Arab journalists, a prosthetic path to hope in Afghanistan, and the music that uplifts Black Americans during a lockdown. Our first story. A core conservative value is loyalty. Yet many older Americans, a key Republican voting bloc, tell our reporter why they've lost faith in President Trump's leadership.
As the debate over lifting lockdowns has intensified, President Donald Trump's eagerness to get the economy moving again seems to have put him at odds with many older voters. According to a recent Morning Consult poll, by a nearly 6-to-1 margin, seniors said the government should prioritize halting the spread of the virus over focusing on the economy. And President Trump's approval rating among voters over the age of 65 dropped 20 points between March and the end of April. While many older adults still support the president and tend to be more conservative in their politics than younger ones, the trend represents a clear warning sign for Mr. Trump. In 2016, he carried seniors by 9 points. Yet several recent national surveys have shown former Vice President Joe Biden leading among older voters. Some seniors say that Mr. Trump, himself a septuagenarian, doesn't seem to understand how vulnerable and undervalued this crisis has made them feel. "The people my age, we have become dispensable," says Wendy Penk, a lifelong Republican in her 60s from Charlotte, North Carolina, who voted for Mr. Trump in 2016, but now plans to vote for Mr. Biden in November. This story was reported by Story Hinckley for The Monitor.
As support for democratic norms and institutions erodes in the West, our reporter examines where that leaves human rights activists and journalists in the Arab world.
If today the world order is shaking, the Arab world has been feeling the foreshocks for nearly a decade. In the wake of the 2011 Arab Spring has come an anti-democratic counter-revolution that rages on. In November, Egyptian police arrested 3 journalists at a Cairo coffee shop. The raid received no media coverage. They remain in prison, like hundreds of rights defenders and journalists across the region. Western governments rarely talk about Arab human rights these days. Consumed by political divisions at home, they are more likely to praise autocratic regimes than challenge them. and the United States and Europe enable the regime's crackdowns with money, weapons, and technology. These regimes have the support of the West. They have money, they have armies, and they have the latest technology, says Khalid Ibrahim, director of the Gulf Center for Human Rights. We only have the word, and it is our duty to get the message out. Yet Arab Democrats say their struggle remains winnable. You must never feel broken or powerless, says Syed Al-Wadi, a Bahraini rights activist. Because that is the entire aim of repression and intimidation, to make you overlook your own power to hold people to account. This story was reported by Taylor Luck in Cairo, Egypt, and Amman, Jordan for The Monitor. It's the seventh story in our global series, Navigating Uncertainty.
Here's a question that implicates the Supreme Court itself and the balance of American democracy. Is a sitting president above the law?
On Tuesday, the High Court examined one of America's toughest, most fundamental questions. Do the laws that apply to everyone else also apply to the president? Any case involving a sitting president is complicated and polarizing. But at a time when the court has grown increasingly deferential to the executive branch, and when this court in particular has a track record of siding with President Donald Trump, these cases carry the potential to rebalance the country's three branches of government in dramatic ways. Specifically, Mr. Trump is seeking to block subpoenas from the New York County District Attorney and the U.S. House of Representatives for personal and Trump Organization financial records held by an accounting firm in a bank he used before entering office. The High Court usually seeks to rule as narrowly as possible, but here, even a narrow ruling could be seismic. By removing the judiciary from federal subpoena fights or broadening presidential immunity in some way, the three branches of government would still be separate, but they might also be less equal. Democracy is tremendously undercut when one or more branches is able to hide or keep damaging information from coming to light, says Michael Gerhardt, a constitutional law professor. The three branches are designed to check each other, not for one branch to check out or one branch to dominate the others. The point of the separation of powers is accountability. This story was reported by Henry Gass for The Monitor.
In Afghanistan, a soft-spoken former lawyer has dedicated himself to helping those wounded in war walk a path from despair to hope. Watching that progression, he says, is a privilege.
For 30 years, Italian physiotherapist Alberto Cairo has shepherded a comprehensive program in Afghanistan run by the International Committee of the Red Cross. At seven orthopedic centers around the country, the former lawyer, reverentially called Mr. Alberto, has overseen an expansion of the ICRC's work fitting disabled Afghans with artificial limbs. The holistic rehabilitation program has broadened to include home visits, job training, social integration, and even wheelchair sports teams. Last year alone, those centers helped more than 160,000 Afghan patients. Their workshops created some 27,000 artificial limbs, put to use in nearly 350,000 physiotherapy sessions. The person who comes the very first time, who has lost one or two legs, they are people in an awful situation, Mr. Cairo explains. But as the patients make tangible progress, he sees despair turn to hope every day. You can see these kinds of miracles, people that, when you looked at them the very first time, you see them totally lost, he says. In front of you, you really see, day by day, people are growing, people are changing. There is a transformation. It's fantastic. This story was reported by Scott Peterson in Kabul, Afghanistan, for The Monitor.
How are communities hardest hit by the coronavirus finding hope? For some people of color, our columnist explains, the connection provided by Black musicians and artists has helped.
Less reported on amid the news about the effect of the coronavirus on African Americans is what has been done to create a much-needed sense of community. Black music has not only raised spirits during this time, but also reaffirmed its necessity in mainstream culture. From rapper Tory Lanez's energetic quarantine radio to sessions with R&B singers like Her and Instagram Live dance parties with DJ D-Nice, the avenues of intimacy created between artists and their fans have been both surprising and refreshing. The Verzuz Beat Battles, founded by Swizz Beatz and Timbaland, also on Instagram Live, have become another entertainment staple. And the battles, two artists, typically songwriters or producers, go toe-to-toe performing their lengthy catalogs in an effort to be named victorious. The deep nostalgia and fellowship from all these online gatherings have fostered a sense of cultural pride and creative appreciation. Music has always been about more than joy for people of color. It's about heritage, resilience, and strength. This column was written by Candace McDuffie for The Monitor.
Now, commentary on Democracy in Iraq from The Monitor's editorial board. Iraq's new prime minister, Mustafa al-Kadhimi, has been in office less than a week, and he's already turned one of the world's youngest democracies into a model for listening to young people. He ordered the release of protesters, reinstated a popular general, started to rein in Iraq's many militias, and vowed to hold early elections. These initial actions reflect a generational shift in Iraq. More than 40% of Iraqis were born after the 2003 war that ousted Saddam Hussein. Many demand a national identity as Iraqis, rather than being exploited by politicians as solely Sunni, Shiite, or Kurd. As a rare democracy in the Middle East, Iraq needs to show that it is possible to have a secular and sovereign state that respects civic rights. So far, Mr. al-Kadhimi is helping to pass the baton from one generation to the next. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about a new strain of generosity. Americans sharing their stimulus checks with those in need. We're also working on a project highlighting personal stories for Memorial Day. Tell us about your loved one who served in the armed forces by filling out the form in today's online edition or emailing us at engage@csps.com. We'd love to hear from you. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how it can sometimes seem that our health, vitality, and joy are age-dependent. This article explores a different perspective, the promise of God's constant care for all His children. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfoss and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.